You're listening to the Nerd to Know Media Network. Join us at nerdtoknowmedia.com.
Broadcasting from the Blanchistan Center, this is Phoenix FM.
This is 92.5 Phoenix FM, community radio for Dublin 15.
Hey everybody, it's JB Jeremy Borash, and you are listening to Darrow O'Connor on the...
Welcome to the Wrestling Rewind. The only wrestling podcast by fans who don't hate wrestling.
All right, folks, welcome to Phoenix 92.5 FM. This is the Wrestling Rewind. My name is Darrow O'Connor, and you are listening to us on a weird kind of a Friday night. Obviously, you've listened to us on it's a Tuesday, but we tape on a Friday night, and it's all quiet on the Western Front. Seems like it's wrestling has kind of calmed down a bit. We're not, you know, earth-shattering news isn't breaking. I know AEW.
There hasn't been an industry overturning revelation in 60 seconds.
So. Literally, yeah. It's like oh, Okada debuted. Well, that's cool. It's not, you know, and that shows you how weird it is that it's not just like.
Can you imagine how huge that would have been any other time period?
Yeah, that's what's blown my mind. I'm like, the John Cena of wrestling has debuted for AEW, and it's like a footnote, you know?
Yeah, it's like a nice bit of, oh, and by the way.
It's like, oh, that's okay. You know, isn't that cute?
This is what it should. This is what wrestling news should be. It should be this kind of thing. It shouldn't be horrific revelations and investigations
and like power struggles and you know, all this mad stuff. It's crazy. So we're kind of back to like normal wrestling news this week, which is kind of weird to say. I can finally talk about WWE 2K24, so we've talked about that as well. Covering obviously AEW, really dominating the news headlines this week, and then we will be getting back in the time machine to cover In Your House number 9, the international incident. Of course, as I said, my name is Darrow O'Connor. I'm joined by the one and only, you heard him, Mr. 1-0, Martin Herty. How are things, Martin?
Oh, Darrow, I'm still coming down from not only that AEW Revolution main event, Sting's perfect, literally perfect retirement, but the 3 or 4 like match of the year candidates that were on that show. I swear to God, I was up in this room about 5 a.m. The Young Bucks double super kicked Sting, and I was like, ah, that's the end of it then. The old Stinger doing the good thing, going out on his back like one of the old guys. No, he sits back up, and I wanted to flip the table, pull the curtains down. It was a miracle I didn't burn the house down. It was buzzing.
Well, we're glad that didn't happen. And, you know, look, good for Sting. There are some controversy. We'll get into that around it. But, you know, it seemed to be, you know, people liked it, which is good. But, yeah, we'll get to that in a second. Again, the biggest news of the week, again, like it literally just broke, is Okada debuting for AEW. For people that don't know who Okada is, Okada was like probably the biggest star of New Japan, and he is like the John Cena of wrestling, really. Next to Shinsuke Nakamura, it was him and Okada, basically. You know, when he taught about modern ish Japanese wrestling, I'm going to be very careful because James Trupenny is going to go mad if I don't do it right. So I'm just kind of like, I'm just aware that he is listening to the show. But yeah.
Well, I think to put it into perspective for people who, you know, who mainly just watch WWE, Okada is, I mean, in terms of Japanese wrestling, he's bigger than Reigns. Like, Reigns is big now. Okada was a legacy lifetime.
He would be Cena. You know,
Cena, Hogan, like he's...
Generational talent.
Absolutely. And carried the industry there for so long. Like, he is... You cannot be overstated how big of a name Okada is.
Yeah, and like again, any Wrestle Kingdom you want, like one of the matches that actually I would say, look, if this is your introduction to Japanese wrestling, which I know for our listeners that might be the case. For listeners of the True Pain Channel, not so much because this is their bread and butter. But if you're listening to this and you've never heard of Okada before, a match that I'd recommend just anyone in general would be Okada and AJ Styles from Wrestle Kingdom a couple of years ago. Phenomenal match, like yeah. Pun intended. Just unbelievable. So I would say, look,
I would be one of those people who really enjoys New Japan, but I don't follow it. Like,
have you seen that match?
Okada, AJ Styles. Oh yeah,
yeah. It's one of those matches.
Whenever I started getting into New Japan, and again, like when I say into New Japan, I mean I watch the G1, I watch Wrestle Kingdom.
Yes.
And if there are other pay-per-views on, I'll watch them, but I very much do the, okay, watch the matches of the guys, you know, from like AEW or whatever that I know. And then obviously you watch the Okada match. Obviously you watch, you know, like years ago, you watched the Nakamura match. You watch the Ibushi match, you know, like the big names.
Yeah, that's kind of what I do as well, yeah.
Yeah. So I would be like one of those guys who's aware of New Japan, but like you say, are not nearly an authority on it, like Mr. Truepenny.
Yeah, like any of the lads that appear on Truepenny, they're the guys to listen to. And again, if you haven't, don't listen to us because we don't know what we're talking about when it comes to Japanese wrestling. They do. Go to the Truepenny channel, check out.
I'm almost afraid to name the Japanese wrestlers I like in case I get the name wrong. Pronounce it wrong. Aye, that old Seamus Nakamura. He's deadly.
He's deadly. But look, it is, you know, kind of air chattering, really, for him to show up in AEW. It's a great boon for them. It's a better fit than WWE, to be honest with you. Okada still has a couple of years left. Like this is, I think he made like four million yen.
Yeah.
Something like that. Like it was a lot of money anyway. It breaks down to $2 million a year or something like that. Yeah.
Thank God you said yen. I was like, yen. Whoa.
Yeah, yen. Like Tony. that's what he's got paid million. In. Yeah, something crazy. Yeah, it was wild. But again, like obviously this is like his retirement tour. He's trying to like feather that nest. Fair play to him. But I don't think he will do nothing in AEW. I think
I think with the Japanese guys, they look at wrestling very differently. Like they focus a lot more on things like legacy. And I think this will be, you know, in terms of coming in for a big farewell tour or a career-ending tour, and his first like consistent appearance in the West.
And he was in TNA.
Did they not bring him in under some weird name and give
matches? No. See, here's the thing. The Rainmaker gimmick was after he was in TNA.
Right.
So he was in TNA first for like a good period of time, and he hadn't broke out. I want to say this the right way because, again, James will be upset. He was in his boy phase, I think that's what they call it, you know, where they're like boys in a dojo.
And he was on,
what did he call it? Excursion. I'm trying to be careful with the terms because I only used them right. He was on excursion in the West and he hadn't come out with his proper Rainmaker yet. So he was there for a while doing everything he does now, but he hadn't really developed the character. I think the better way to look at it now is he's in the West with a character, and that's the difference.
Well, then it's not that we'll say it's the first sort of sustained Western exposure to the Rainmaker.
That's a much better way of putting it. Yeah.
But either way, yeah, I don't think he's coming in for a big payday and to wave at the crowd. And I think he's coming in to do the matches with Kenny Omega, with Will Ospreay.
But look, the payday helped.
of course. But yeah, I mean, to be fair to the guy, like he is uprooting his entire life and moving to a completely different culture, language. Like, yeah, I'd want paid, you know?
Yeah, like, look, it makes it long. I'll be honest with you, people are like, oh, he should have been in WWE. I don't really see him being in WWE makes any sense. He probably will eventually.
No.
No, eventually. I mean, come on. Money's money, right? But
I agree with you in that. I don't see him fitting in WWE. It's one of those strange things. It's, you see Cody now, and you're like, yeah, Cody suits that presentation better. the likes of Ospreay and Okada, like, they're like,
yeah, well, see, Ospreay needs a talker and to wear a mask and never speak, and then he'd be grand.
Bruv.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, Will Ospreay is probably the worst. Like, he's simultaneously the best wrestler in the world and the worst wrestler in the world at the same time. So,
he's the kind of guy who wouldn't work in WWE because he couldn't do scripted promos.
Can't do any promos.
Well, I think there's a kind of a charm when he's let talk, like, just kind of naturally and honestly. It's not like spine tingling, like what you get with some guys who are amazing, but at least they sound natural and comfortable. Because when you're talking to him in real life, he probably does say bruv every 4 seconds.
No, he does. But the thing about it is, it's like, I'll put it this way, right? When Irish wrestlers went over to WWE, or, you know, or even Conor McGregor had to relearn how to speak.
Yeah.
So people can understand him. So he's palatable.
You hear it with Conor, you hear it with Sheamus, you hear it with Becky.
Yeah.
They do this thing where they talk very deliberately and slowly and enunciate.
Yeah, because they have to be understood by a mainstream audience. Unfortunately,
they should just do with Irish wrestlers what I wish they would do with Japanese wrestlers. Just let them cut the promo in Japanese and just put subtitles up.
Well, yeah, I mean, that works too.
Just let Becky Lynch go out there and take his Dublin accent and go off.
But the thing about it is, you will have people complaining about that, right? So it's got to do with a presentation thing. And unfortunately to AEW, it doesn't do them any favors to do this, because it's like, okay, it makes you still number two, or still makes you more indie, because it's a much more indie presentation. Will Ospreay doesn't need anything in the ring. He doesn't need to go to NXT. He doesn't need to learn to wrestle. He needs to learn to speak. He needs to learn to be a presentable character for mainstream audience, right? And again, I don't mean this negatively. I'm just saying from a American standpoint, you know, they need this, right? Like, even look at your man, the Irish fella who was doing commentary in WWE. Terrible, right? Actually horrific, right? I was not a fan of him at all, and he got fired promptly because he just did not fit in.
Oh my God, did he?
Yeah, he's gone. Yeah, he lasted a couple of months.
Oof.
But yeah,
gone
but
completely,
they,
or did they put him in a
completely.
Different role, or
no,
just...
gone completely. And that makes sense, right? He had to relearn how to speak, and he just didn't fit. So it is always a risk. Wrestling is still very American focused, so some guys will struggle. It's great that AEW do the WCW thing where it's not that big of a deal, but it's still something he's underdeveloped in. Okay, I mean, Okada doesn't need it because he's Okada. He comes in with this larger than life, like, it's Okada, right? You know what I mean? He doesn't need anything like at all. He never needs to cut a promo. It's like, you know, Sting or whatever. It's just they're the names. But with
Ospreay,
thank you. With Ospreay, it's AJ Styles without AJ Styles.
Yeah,
and I think
you'll definitely see that develop and grow while he's in AEW. But like, he's done some amazing promos, like the press conference after the match with the first match with Kenny Omega, where he lost to Omega. Like, his promo at the press conference after that was brilliant. And it wasn't, like, great, like, greatly worded or filled it really cool catchphrases or anything, but it was just really passionate, really genuine. And
yeah, but
that's enough.
But that's not what... That will sell to an AEW audience. AEW fans will love it, right? But it still will put him in the pocket where that's where you'll... Because, again, the whole point of having two wrestling promotions, or three wrestling promotions if you want to include TNA, but you can't really. It's not fair. It's giving them different places to work. Because here's the thing. If I was Will Ospreay, I would be looking at this as, like, right, this is my chance to really make a name for myself in the West and really establish myself as, like, a star that I can take this and make Cody money, right? Okada money. Yeah, well, whatever. You know, just, but again, Will Ospreay isn't worth Okada money because he hasn't got that mainstream appeal. He hasn't got that character. He's just someone who does flips really well. And I put it this way, right? The same thing happened here in 2014. I can't remember when AJ Styles left TNA. But when he left TNA, he was AJ Styles, right? But he had like, there was a bit of, he wasn't fully ready for the mainstream. And I remember there was a very similar approach and discussion happening. I'll try to find the show. But it's somewhere in the archives. But go back and look at some of the articles, folks, if you don't remember this. But they'd go back and there was a discussion, is AJ Styles ready for WWE? Because he wasn't, right? And he went over to Japan and really, really worked on getting his character ready and becoming a much more serious package. And there was still, there's up until he debuted at the Royal Rumble, people were still like, he could go to NXT. And with Ospreay, he'd have to go to NXT, you know, where he is now. So my hope with him in AEW is that when we get phenomenal matches, but we're going to get those anyway. We're going to get the dream matches. We're going to get, you know, all the stars and Meltzer, you know, loving them. And I was like, that's great. But that was never in doubt. My thing that I'm watching him is, do I still hate every time he opens his mouth? Do I want to listen to what he says? Do I like him as a character? And the answer is no right now. I mean, in the ring, bell to bell, phenomenal. Everything else around it, oh my God, please. I
think this will be a big proving ground from in that aspect.
Yeah.
Because, as you say, even when he was in Japan, yes, he's cutting promos and that, but there isn't as much pressure because you have the language barrier and all that, and there's not a huge Western audience watching. And you can kind of get away with maybe that aspect of your game not being as strong. But look, I don't think they bring someone like him in without a long-term plan for really capitalizing on his incredible in-ring ability, like really
here's the thing, Martin, right? Remember, it's very... Roman Reigns was mocked from being on the mic, and now he's probably the most successful modern wrestling character ever. It doesn't take much to change that. But yeah, it does take someone with a strong hand to be like, look, you need to fix this. And it's not Tony Khan, because it's not Tony Khan.
I think you're very unfair to Tony Khan.
No, it's not, right? It's not. But the thing about AEW is they have great agents and bookers backstage. And my hope is that someone there actually goes, right, here's what we need to do, and has some sort of, kind of help him get there, you know. Now, again, I don't think it's WWE either that could do it for Will Ospreay. It has to be Will Ospreay to do it. But I do think, you know, look at the people they have there. They have Mox, they have Claudio, they have Daniel Bryan, they have Samoa Joe. They have enough, they have the right people. And I think Sting will probably hang out for a little bit as well. They have the right people there.
Sting, Eddie Kingston, MJF, like these are like top level promo guys, you know.
Yeah, and they have enough people around them to be like, right, this is what you need to do. This is what you need to change. And I think that will happen. I think that's what will happen. But that, for me, that's what I'm looking for with Will Ospreay and AEW. Because otherwise, what's the point? You haven't learned anything. You haven't developed. You're still just...
Well, that's what I was saying. Yeah. I don't think they'd have brought him in without a long-term plan for that. Like you say, yes, he can do the in-ring stuff, but I don't think they'd bring him in without planning to capitalize on that by really boosting those other aspects of his game by going, yes, he's going to give us amazing matches, but here's the storyline, here's the feuds that are going to like bring him to the absolute next level.
Yeah, and I think that I'm really excited for that part, you know, genuinely, because it is a whole different ballgame, you know. Like, but if they fumble that, there's a lot of opportunity there to really fumble it. Now, again, TNA have done a pretty good job with him as well, but again, that was more kind of like, oh, thanks for being here, you know.
Yeah,
it's not the same thing, you know. But here's the thing, right? So real quick, right? Sting's last match, what did you think of it?
Sensational. The absolute most perfect way for a legend to go out and cap off what I think is probably, and I don't mean this necessarily in terms of matches or anything, but what I think is probably the most perfect career in wrestling history. Because Sting went through 5 decades. He was in every single major company that exists anywhere in the world. He had all his titles, all his reigns. You know, he got the glory. He retired on his own terms with no, like, debilitating injuries or, like, you know, he's not crippled shuffling around the place. There's no, like, black cloud of allegations or anything hanging over him or, you know, investigations into him or anything like that. He's completely clear of all that. So I think Sting had legitimately probably the best wrestling career ever, and this match was just the perfect way to end it. And I'm so glad that he won rather than, you know, do the traditional thing and go out in his back.
Yeah, that's fair. And that's probably why they booked the tag match as well, so they could have Darby doing...
Oh, yeah,
You know, doing all the spots.
The whole presentation of Sting in AEW has been really clever. They've been like, look, he's a legend and he's in incredible shape for his age and the career he's had, but he can't go one-on-one. Like, we can't, you know, we can't give him a singles run for the world title or something like that.
Yeah, so irresponsible.
I think they absolutely perfectly hid the negatives and highlighted the positives.
Oh, very good. Well, that's the main thing. Look, and everybody seemed to have a good time with it. It was grand.
It's grand.
Yeah, I mean, it was grand. Like, I liked the having the three stings there. I thought that was pretty cool. It was interesting way to see him win. You know, a tornado tag team match was the right way to do it. It really was.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, look, it's in the books now anyway, and it was the biggest gate for AEW, I think, since All In as well. So that was pretty good. I think they really did capitalize and in the right way, like, booked the show that was all geared towards it and didn't seem like it took away from it. It was crazy. Like, we talked about this last week. It kind of felt bad. I kind of felt bad for everybody else on the card. But it was a good show overall.
I did before it, but, when the actual pay-per-view happened, I thought it was incredible.
It felt like it had a great card and Sting. You know what I mean? Where, like, it was two separate things you were buying.
Capping it off, yeah.
Yeah.
No, like, on any other night, there was three or four matches on this what would be match of the year contenders, only they happened on this pay-per-view, you know?
Yeah. No, that was pretty much my takeaway from it as well. I was going to say.
So we'll just next week be getting over the arrival of Kazuchika Okada when we have the arrival of Mercedes Moné.
Yes.
So she'll be debuting at AEW's Big Business on the 13th of March. How do you feel about, pretty clear lines on, like, Cody's more suited to WWE, Ospreay or Okada more suited to AEW. Where do you think Mercedes falls?
I don't think Cody's suitable for WWE. I think Cody's not suitable for anything.
You think Cody's suitable for
Stardust?
Retirement home?
No. Stardust. Or Damaged. I mean, Cody is, you know, that's a whole other thing. Like,
Dashing?
Dashing, yeah. Dashing, Damaged, or Stardust. All way as far as, they're far superior than whatever Cody Rhodes is now. Look, now, I don't.
I'm starting to get the impression that you don't have adrenaline in your soul. Cody.
Can I just say one thing, actually? People are like, he's so over, right? And then they'll post a video of people cosplaying as him and singing the song. I'm like, yes, song is over. You take away the song, he's not over.
But that, I find that a lot with WWE particularly.
Of course it is. Yeah.
Really like everything except the wrestling. They love the entrances. They love the promos, you know. They love, like, that Elimination Chamber pay-per-view that happened in Australia. Right. I didn't even watch it. I saw someone tweeted that it was a 5-hour pay-per-view with 1 hour and 40 minutes of wrestling on it. And I couldn't bring myself.
Well, here's the thing. It's wrestling is a very small element. Like, I don't know if you've seen the video. Now, it is by Max Landis, who, obviously, you know, we will leave it there because we're on radio. But it's called Wrestling Isn't Wrestling. And the end of it is wrestling is about everything except wrestling. And that's kind of true.
I think WWE is about everything except wrestling. AEW and New Japan tend to focus a lot more heavily on the in-ring stuff.
But New Japan is like, that's the style of wrestling. And AEW is booked by, is booked by Tony Khan.
Genius.
I would not say genius. I would say there are geniuses working there.
AEW has four or five guys who you genuinely have to wonder sometimes if they don't know that it's a work, whereas Japan has a company that doesn't know it's a work.
Yeah, well, that's because in Japan it usually isn't. They're like, we're just going to hit each other, and that's a... there is a difference there. I mean, when you're watching AEW, you kind of know what you're going to get. And if you get over in AEW, like, here's the thing. To go with Cody Rhodes, when he was in AEW, the fans turned on him very quickly because of what he was doing. And in WWE, it takes a little bit longer for that to happen, but it does happen.
Well, like, Cody got two or three really good years where he was a top babyface.
Yeah.
But the whole time he was a top face, like everyone else in the Elite, was doing really complex. So, you know, the Bucks were faces and heels, and Hangman was going through this kind of downward self-doubting spiral, and Omega was, you know, he was the kind of the ace of the company, and then he was the belt collector. And Cody just stayed smiling Cody Rhodes the whole way through it.
Yeah, exactly. And,
like, I know you have an issue with him, but, I mean, take Cody out of it. Put anyone else in that position. If you don't change, if you just constantly keep being the same thing, that's going to grate on any group of fans.
And that's my point. It happened a lot quicker in AEW than it normally would. Like in WWE, main WWE, I don't know. It just from the way that it is, it is like the fan base. Obviously, they're probably a lot younger and stuff like that. Where it's like it's not that big of a deal for most of them, but it is for like more serious fans or more adult fans. Like, look at John Cena. John Cena made a career of just being John Cena, you know?
Yeah.
I still don't know what his character was all these years later.
He did a vaguely militaristic salute, and had a towel.
And that was it. Like, I don't know what his character is. I think like Cody's cashing in on that, but WWE then is not WWE now, right? So, yeah, if he doesn't change, and I do believe if he doesn't win at WrestleMania, that's kind of it. You know, he's done. Or if he does win the belt, he's done. Like, he's finished the story. So we've gotten to that. But I don't know. When you're in AEW, you know what you're watching. When you're watching TNA, you know what you're in for. When you're watching WWE, I still think with WWE we're in a bit of a change at the moment. It's very hard to put your finger what it actually is, but it definitely is about other things other than just the in-ring product, which you are right about. Like, again, look at Bray Wyatt.
Yeah.
One of the worst wrestlers of all time.
And it feels wrong saying that because he was so entertaining.
But it's so true. Yeah, because he didn't need it. You know, like, here's the thing. I would much rather watch a Bray Wyatt program than a Will Ospreay match. Because at a certain point, I know what I'm going to get with Will Ospreay. But with Bray Wyatt, you never really knew what you were getting. I have to say, though, if he goes in the Hall of Fame, we don't know. Paulie Dangerously is in the Hall of Fame so far. I think they put Bray Wyatt's down. But if he is in it, they need to understand that they literally dropped millions of dollars with Bray Wyatt over and over again. But again, the man was atrocious in the ring. It was awesome until he got in the ring, and then it just collapsed.
So was Hogan. So was Hogan. Warrior.
Yeah.
So was Undertaker for a big, long...
That's true. Most of Undertaker's streak at WrestleMania is... You know what we're actually going to do? Before Mania, we're going to watch the streak. We're going to do that. We're going to watch the streak, and we're going to go through it week by week. We'll do like three or four in a row.
Yeah, love that.
Yeah, and I think... you know what we'll do? We'll try to be unbiased and just watch it for what it is.
And yeah, I think, yeah, and, for a match.
Yeah, yeah, for a match. Because, like, in my head, I already know how bad a lot of it is, but I haven't actually sat down in a while and watched them. I think we'll do that.
I would argue that for a long time at the start of his career, Undertaker was terrible. But that was partly down to the character.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
And then for a long time, at the end of his career, Undertaker was terrible. But that was down to just
age
and the man
and where,
and
yeah,
beat up and everything.
But there is
Undertaker
there
was only actually good in the ring for probably a relatively short period of his career.
I think it's from 1996 to 2012.
Maybe not that long. That sounds about right. Yeah,
that sounds about right. Yeah, like give or take. But I think like the things that people look at and go, Taker's career is here. I think it's from that time period. One thing as well, before we move on, and you know, I want to be really quick on this. You disagree with me that Sting and Taker will happen?
100%.
I'm going to go on record on the show.
Finally going to win one of these?
No, I'm going to go on record and say it, right? If Sting and Taker doesn't happen within a year, it's never going to happen, right? I do believe we will have Sting versus Undertaker in some kind of fashion. It won't be a one-on-one match because that would be horrific. I do think it'll be some kind of cinematic thing. And it will happen within a year. If it doesn't, it will never happen. But I will go on record and say, if it's going to happen, it's going to be in the next year. If it doesn't happen this year, it will not happen at all.
I'm going to drop
that prediction in.
That's risky because your predictions have been so good the past like 2 years.
Well, look, as I said, if it's going to happen, it's going to have to be this year. And if it doesn't happen after this year, it's never happening. So from now until WrestleMania next year, it'll either be at WrestleMania or it'll be a Saudi show. But it won't be an in-ring thing. It'll be a stare down. It'll be a like some kind of thing. Because Sting's really old and Undertaker is too broken down. So their only choice is a cinematic thing. I'm seeing a massive amount of like push for it. And if we've seen anything, when that starts to happen, particularly with Triple H in control, stuff happens. So I'm just going to leave that one there, Martin. We will go back to it. But if this happens, yeah. I mean,
I don't think so because I think Sting's at the stage of his career where he doesn't need the money. He doesn't need the payday. He's gotten that huge send off. He doesn't need the adulation of the fans. I think he's at the stage in his career now where he's thinking legacy and he's going, I have left in a way hardly anyone, maybe nobody has ever done before, had this huge long career and I've come out alive the other side of it, you know, unhurt, and I've left this amazing legacy behind and I don't think I'm going to fiddle with it, you know, for the risk of, you know, for to throw another couple of million in my account.
No, see, I don't
on the off chance that
I don't even think it's money. The only reason why I'd say, and the only reason why I think this is a goer, Sting joined WWE for this match. He originally agreed the match with Seth to get closer to Taker. It is a thing he's always wanted to do. I don't know if Taker's the same, but the fact we know cinematic matches can be done, and some of them are pretty good, some of them weren't. I think they're great. It is a thing that can be done. It's just, we will see. But you're probably right. I just think, given the age of everyone involved here, if it doesn't happen within the next year, it's absolutely not going to. But now's the opportunity to do it. I mean, look, Undertaker showed up at Saudi Arabia to give a trophy to a bunch of lads at a soccer tournament. Taker's doing this stuff anyway, right? Sting is probably out of his contract now. He can kind of do what he wants. It won't be a long-term thing. It won't be for a belt. It might not even be a match, but it will be some kind of confrontation. Could be a confrontation, but Sting and Undertaker will stand looking at each other, do spooky things, and that will probably be it. But I think that is a very high possibility within a year. After a year, Martin, if it doesn't happen, it's done.
We'll see. I don't see it myself. The only prediction I would make is that I think we'll get Sting at All In as just a kind of a thank you thing. Maybe he'll do some sort of belt presentation if they drag out this tag team tournament, or potentially, bit of a long shot, he might be the first inductee into like an AEW Hall of Fame.
That could be it too. That could be it too, because he was the first inductee in TNA Hall of Fame as well. So
that's right. And there is a pro wrestling Hall of Fame.
There
not
is
a, not a not like affiliated to any one company.
Yeah. So look, we leave that one there, but I wanted to get that on record while we're taping. So we're going to hop in the time machine all the way back to July 1st, 1996, Vancouver, British Columbia in Canada, in General Motors Place. Attendance was 14,804. And this, of course, was In Your House, number 9, International Incident. Martin, look, this show, we've gone through these and they've been a bit of a slog.
And every week I've had to promise you they get better, Dara. I promise.
You know what? I've been sitting here going, okay, you know, and there has been some notable absences that where the quality dipped. They were obviously the New Age Outlaws, who were both former number one contenders, 3 seconds away, just three. They would have won.
That's it.
And Double J, Jeff Jarrett, right? I just wanted to call out that on the show that has one of the Outlaws on it, it actually starts to go up again. So we had the introduction of the Smoking Guns, Bart and Billy Gunn, with Sonny, which I actually forgot Sonny managed them, opening up the show. And it actually got really good. I mean, I was actually quite not a fan of this show. I wouldn't watch it again. But no, everything
but it wasn't the slog that some of the other ones were.
The main event lost me. I'm not going to lie, because I hate six-man tags. But we'll get to that. But the rest of the show I actually really quite liked. Did a really good job introducing Mankind, which is our first appearance of Mankind so far chronologically. Austin had a pretty good match with Mark Merrow, and Taker had a match.
First appearance, I think, of
Stone Cold. He just won the King of the Ring, and then Undertaker had a match, and that's all it was, with Goldust, which, you know. So look, what did you think overall before we go in match by match?
Yeah, overall, this is, for me, like, you can look at this two separate ways, at the WWF and the way it was going at the time, or as part of this In Your House arc we're doing. And I think for both of them, this is by no means a fantastic pay-per-view, but it does mark a kind of a turning point. You can start to see things getting better. You can start to see matches, styles going in a different direction with the kind of people they're bringing in, you know, like Mick Foley. You can start to see things getting a wee bit more risque with the likes of Goldust and Shawn Michaels. I think this is not a great pay-per-view, not a terrible one, but definitely hints at better things coming.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's one of the bright spots in this, where it's looking more like a, I don't want to say modern product, because that's, it obviously isn't, it's like nearly 30 years old, but modern presenting, right? Where it's like, the storylines are a bit more developed. It's not as silly. Jerry the King Lawler is hilarious, actually, on this show, without being too Jerry the King Lawler. This is my favorite presentation of him, actually, because he is genuinely funny. The commentary team's pretty good. It's Vince, JR, and the King. A really good three-man booth, actually. They all play off each other quite well, and I kind of wish we had more of this. It's funny that Vince is on this, and you know, WWE's relationship with him
haven't gone through the network and blurred him out yet, have they?
And blurred him out, yeah. Which is, yeah, in 2K24, they actually do blur out Vince McMahon. So
that is bizarre.
It's insane. So, you know, maybe when this goes to Netflix, that might happen, but we don't know.
It's actually mad. Like, we obviously don't want to get taken off track, but it is mad when you think, what will Netflix do with that library?
Yeah, because like when you're watching the show, it's like, are you going to replace him? You might re-record the audio or something, because he's like, he's a commentator on the show, and he's
he's all over it. Like,
so it's very, very hard. So that was just one thing I wanted to mention real quick. But look, the first opener.
The other thing I want to get into just before we start the matches is this it's a B-level pay-per-view. It's
very B-level. Yeah,
it's not great. It's not terrible, but it's not great. But my God, this crowd is super hot.
Yes,
this crowd is really hot for it. It's 14, nearly 15,000 people in attendance. They're absolutely rabid. At one stage, I don't know if it's accidentally or not, but they knock down the barrier while Shawn Michaels is coming in. Yeah. Right. This is only the second time they've been to Vancouver. Vancouver is a red hot wrestling city, but for some reason, big companies hardly ever go there. Like AEW is going to Vancouver in the next couple of weeks, and all their other weekly shows, you know, they've been kind of stagnating around 3,000-4,000 for their weekly shows everywhere they go. Bam, they head to Vancouver and they're looking at 7,000 or 8,000 like tickets sold, and they're still, you know, more than a month out from the show.
Vancouver's it's very much the same as Dublin and London.
Yeah, but they never go.
And,
it's so weird.
I think it is just like logistics, where like Saudi Arabia, obviously they're going over and getting paid like ridiculous amounts of money for it. But those market, like, that's a hot crowd as well. Not only because it's very warm, but because they're actually all into it and they don't get it. I mean, if you're deprived of something like WWE or AEW or, you know, even TNA, NXT, mainstream wrestling, it's going to sell. You know, it's just a case of they can't.
The thing I could never understand with Vancouver, though, is that it's literally just over the border from the US. Like,
yeah, but
I went out one Paddy's Day in Vancouver and woke up in Portland. Like, so it's,
but think about
it's not that far.
Well, no, but think about it this way, right? There's a reason why Ohio is such a big wrestling city. Like, if you just hang out in Ohio for like 2 weeks, you'll either be hit by AEW or Raw. It just shows up, and it's just because they're going up and down the East Coast, going over the West Coast, and then up. They very rarely go over to the West Coast as well. It's kind of a big deal. They do it for a series of shows. Even at WrestleMania, they're doing a bunch of shows in New York and then going up to Philly. You know, it's just logistics.
Is it just purely logistics? Just
I think, yeah.
The cost of moving everything
cross-country,
basically across a continent.
Yeah, that's generally what it is. Like, to put it in simple terms, I've actually sat with this for a while and thought about this exact thing. That's all it is. When you look at how WWE tours today, because they're like the best gauge of this, and any other company that's tried it will have to kind of base on WWE. WCW did something similar, but in the South. It's still the East Coast. That's where they are, you know? And it's unfortunate. It's just kind of how it is. They may or may not go over to California, but if you notice, when they do, it's a big deal because it's cross continent. You know, it really is. Okay, so look, we only have 90 minutes left, so let's kind of get into this.
Go.
The Belladonnas, Skip and Zip. I hate this team so much. I can't even put it into terms how much I hate them. It's a lot, and it's not because it's anything personal. Like, I don't dislike the people. Like Chris Cardino. Is Skip and Zip. It's Thomas Pritchard, Bruce Pritchard, right?
Yeah.
But, oh my God, it's the worst team I have ever seen in my life.
I mean, I like the Smoking Guns. I love Sonny. And even when the Body Donnas came out, it was like, I can get behind a team called the Body Donnas. You know, it's kind of, you could see them being like prima donna heels or whatever. But Skip and Zip, I don't know what it was about those names, but I almost instantly stopped caring about this.
Yes.
As soon as the announcers gave their individual names, I just stopped caring.
Chris Candino, Dark Side of the Ring actually is really good if you want to watch that after listening to this. And obviously Sonny and Chris Candino were dating. And Chris Candino's story is quite sad. But Bruce Pritchard, right, at this point, I can't remember if he's Zip or what. Is he Zip or Ziff? Which one? Zip or Zip? Which one is he? See, that's the thing.
Zip.
He's Zip, right? He looks way too old to be in there. Do you remember? I don't know.
It's not even Bruce Pritchard. It's Thomas Pritchard. It's Bruce Pritchard's older brother. So he's even older.
Oh, wow. He's older again.
Older than Bruce.
Yeah, you know, this isn't like an ages thing or not that, right? It's like, it's just like a clash that doesn't make sense, right? The lads in there are like young guns and they're supposed to be presented that way, right? And you have Zip in there and he's 15, 20 years older than them. It's very
don't
much,
call him Zip. Like,
you don't call him Zip. Call it
Zippy Fellaflame.
Different names, right? Zip is like a cruiserweight who's like 18 and he's jumping back and forth. This is like, remember when Michael P. Hayes was teaming with the Hardy Boys and he came out dressed as the Hardy Boys.
Oh,
do you remember that?
Yeah.
That yeah, that's what this immediately stunk of.
Yeah, what's that?
And the match itself, I'll be honest with you, the match itself was quite good. Everyone in there is, you know, they're not bad workers. They're all really, really good. It's just, it's a terrible gimmick that just dies the minute you hear their names, Skip and Zip. You're like...
You'd think someone like Thomas Pritchard would have known that, would have said, this gimmick is death. It screams. It doesn't even scream jobber. It screams jobber who doesn't even get an entrance.
Yes, that's it. It's just and that's what that's
announced that, in the ring as and facing him is Zip.
Yeah, it's death for them. And again, like even though they got the win here, they got it in the worst circumstances. It didn't make them look good. It didn't make them look like you take them seriously in any way. The real winners of this match was everybody who watched Sonny.
Oh yeah.
So that was it. It was a good opener. Again, hindsight's 2020 here. I think the Body Donnas could have been better if the names had been different, if the presentation was a little bit different. But then again, yeah. It kind of was 1996.
I also would have taken 4 or 5 minutes off this and put it on the Mankind match.
Yes, which, again, Mankind defeated Henry O. Godwin. The only reason why Mankind got such a really strong performance, and my God, he looked like a killer in this, is because they were building up to his feud with they were building his feud with Taker, but they were building up to his match at the Boiler Room Brawl at SummerSlam 1996, which happened a month later. So it was this, trying to portray him as strongly as possible, and he really, really looked like a killer.
He did. He looked amazing here. This whole pay-per-view is kind of a story of not so much the people who were there as the people who weren't. So yes. Obviously in the main event, we'll get talking about it. We were supposed to have the Ultimate Warrior. We'll get into why he wasn't there. But this match wasn't supposed to be against Henry Godwin. It was supposed to be Mankind versus Jake the Snake.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But Jake at that stage had sort of fallen off the wagon again and wasn't fit for presentation, unfortunately.
I have to say though, Mankind at this point, this character is so much darker than the Mankind that we know and would
come
to know.
One of my absolute favorite versions of Mick Foley.
It's so good. Like he's a lot lighter as well. And he's like 60, 70 pounds lighter than he would be in 1989. And man, the way he moves, and obviously he hasn't fallen off the Hell in a Cell a bunch of times and hasn't got his brain rattled by the Rock with 15 chair shots or something like that. So,
well, we're going to see it in the next In Your House what he can do. He has one of the best matches of his career in the next In Your House.
I can't wait. And it's like, this was a great like teaser towards that. The next match is Stone Cold defeating Mark Merrow. And here's the thing, right? So this is before Austin's stinger with Owen Hart. So it's a much more ring technician version of Austin, where he can go. Like, Austin obviously made his career as a brawler, but he wasn't always a brawler. He had to transition to that because his neck was mangled. And it was a treat to really see him in there actually being a ring technician.
And a treat to see him in there with someone else who can really go.
Yes, like, so exactly.
A fully healthy Austin with a very, very underrated Mark Merrow. Mark Merrow was phenomenal.
It's really sad to see Mark Merrow, in hindsight, see what would happen to him. But he had all the tools really, really go for it at this point. Unfortunately, Sable was his manager. People like Sable more, so we know what happened. But
can't think of why. Can you think of one or possibly two reasons why?
It's a mystery to me. But this match was a sleeper hit, and it really shouldn't be. But definitely, if you're going to watch one match on this card, definitely watch this one.
I was going to say the same. I thought this was the match of the night for me.
The stunner was weird, I'll be honest with you. The stunner was very lazy, but it wasn't.
I think he's still, was he still fairly new to using it?
Yeah, he'd only started using it, yeah.
Like, it was only at the last pay-per-view where he'd gotten rid of the Million Dollar Man. And at that stage, he was using the Million Dollar Dream.
He was
a finisher, so
yeah.
But do you know what? I have faith in this young Austin fella. I think he'll get the hang of that stunner.
That's it. One of these days. The next match, and we'll use that term very loosely, was The Undertaker versus Goldust. Now, earlier on in the show, we talked about Undertaker not necessarily being the best worker, not necessarily providing the best matches. And this is a case of one of them. Goldust in there is being Goldust. He's a relatively new character. But this really was 12 minutes of faffing about until we got Mankind.
So much faff.
Really was. It was just, you know, Goldust not wanting to wrestle Undertaker, standing there, blah, blah, blah.
Well, the problem was, this was a match between two characters who are all about presentation.
They're all about being character. That's all it was.
And it's fine when you have one guy in there who wrestles and one guy who does the big thing and then, you know, hot dogs for the crowd. But when you have two guys in there whose whole shtick is hot dogging to the crowd, this dragged me. I can't believe it was only 12 minutes. It felt like it was about 20.
Yeah, like, the thing about it was, it really was just to build to Mankind coming out of the ring. Now, here's the thing, right? If this had been on Raw about 3 years later, it would have been a lot tighter. But they hadn't figured this out yet, so it was 12 minutes of just kind of wasting time. Mankind would come out of the ring and would attack the Undertaker, but then the lights would go off and the Undertaker would disappear and come back and him and Mankind would have like a brawl to the back, basically. And this, of course, would set up the boiler room brawl.
That was pretty cool.
It was.
That kind of made me really want, even though I know what happens next, that kind of really made me really want to see what happens next. But it kind of just really reinforced our point that the Undertaker has this amazing career in video packages.
And that's why I really, really want to watch his streak. And we're actually going to plan that now after the show.
I'm
because
100% on for that, yeah.
I have to, you know, we have to follow this rabbit hole.
Give me that giant Gonzalez showdown.
So look, we have about 7 minutes left, right? So real quick, the main event. I wasn't a fan of it, but what did you think?
It was okay. It was, it was a bit long for what it was. Look, it's a pay-per-view main event. There was no world title on the line, and it was a multi-man match.
And there was no IC belt on the line either.
There was no IC belt on the line. And on the heel side, you had three really good wrestlers. You know, well, Vader and Owen Hart, Bulldog can be carried to a good match. On the babyface side, you had Shawn Michaels, and he was carrying Ahmed Johnson and Psycho Sid. Michaels was in the ring for most of this. You know, he kind of tagged the other guys in to come in, do a big thing, and then go back out. So parts of it dragged a little bit. Sid, as we were talking about earlier, is only there because it's funny, it actually relates to what me and Dara were talking about before the show. He's on about the Comic-Con he's going to. And the only reason Sid was there is because of comic books.
No way.
Because the Ultimate Warrior had this huge falling out with McMahon and WWF over his Destrucity comic book series.
Right.
And he wanted WWF to buy something like 2 million copies of his comics and sell them at WWF events. And he wanted that to be part of his contract. So his contract would be, he get this huge payoff, but they'd also buy, you know, 2 million copies of this comic. And it got to the stage where Vince was just like, no, I can't, no.
That's an interesting. I have to say, look, wrestling is so weird. And that's one of the more interesting but weird things that can only happen in wrestling. Buy my comic book. No, okay.
No, not buy my comic book. Buy my comic book 2 million times.
Or else I won't wrestle, which is what you actually want me here. Ah, weird.
So they brought Psycho Sid back in, who had previously been let go. And look, like you say, it was a multi-man. Do you know what? It kind of typified this whole pay-per-view. This whole pay-per-view would have been a really interesting episode of Raw.
It would have been. That's really what it felt like, yeah.
Yeah, but as a pay-per-view, I would have felt a bit let down as a fan.
You know, if I'd
shelled out for this.
You know what, though, right? If you were in Vancouver, you probably would have loved it, though.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and again, like, this was what we said. It's like a... a cheap way to, before they did two shows or whatever, it was a cheap way to kind of raise some revenue, provide a bring their house show on the road. And I think, you know, it kind of hit me. And that's what these were up until probably the next one. And then it kind of developed into a more modern pay-per-view. These were house shows. That's what these were. These are house shows that they put on pay-per-view.
Yeah. Oh, you know? The other thing I'd say is, like, say what you will about Psycho Sid, man, that jackknife powerbomb is terrifying.
It's
as good as Nash's. It legitimately looks terrifying.
Oh, look, I mean, if nothing else, that's a good thing to take away from it. So look, I would say if you're looking for something to watch, definitely watch the Austin match. What about you?
Yeah, I'd say the Austin match. The Mankind match is only 6 minutes long.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
And it's like, it's not for Henry or God when you're watching it. No, but it's really cool seeing this very, very early iteration of the Mankind character. And even then, Foley is taking these nuts bumps. Like, it's a B-level pay-per-view show with Henry or Godwin, and he takes a flat back from the ring to outside. He's a lunatic.
I can't wait to see the Boiler Room Brawl match, and I'm also looking forward to seeing the Shawn Michaels match. It's going to be really good. But look, Martin, we do have to leave it there. Is there anything you want to plug before we finish up for the week?
No, it's just, it's so nice to get on to our wrestling podcast and talk about wrestlers and wrestling and nothing else.
Yeah, it's a bit of a change. We've kind of talked about everything else except for the wrestling. But look, I would say, folks, our Patreon is there. Go over to nerdtoknowmedia.com, go over to the wrestlingrewind.com, and our Patreon is there. There's different tiers. Martin, what can the good folks get if they want to give us a rennet?
Oh, well, let's not like get way ahead of ourselves.
Okay.
You build your way up to a rennet. You might want to give us an X-Pac Euro, and if you weren't aware of what X-Pac shouts at the start of his entrance song, then you owe us an X-Pac Euro. You might want to sign up for the Punk Penny. Penny every day until CM Punk returns, and then a penny every day until he inevitably implodes again. Or if you're a real fan and you want something really special, you might throw us an old rennet, which is tenor spelled backwards, and that gets you a shout out on the show. You get to give us your legally distinct Bahuli list. We'll have a crack about it. We might even get you on the show to talk about your legally distinct Bahuli list.
Legally distinct,
we have to say that. But pride of place in your house will go a handwritten letter from the Wrestling Rewind, handwritten backwards.
You won't find a deal anywhere else like that, folks.
Madness. I don't even know how we can afford to do it.
I know. It's crazy.
It's only because you went it doesn't make any sense.
Well, look. If that sounds like something you want to do, we definitely appreciate it. Go over to the Nerd to Know Media website, the Wrestling Rewind website. They're all there. Our social media now is actually being used. So if you want to follow us, you can go over to, I think we are on Facebook, and we're also on Instagram. And
Facebook,
they're being updated.
Instagram and Twitter.
And Twitter as well. I'm actually going through the shows and putting them up. What are we not on? We're not on TikTok.
We're not on TikTok, Bebo,
MySpace.
MySpace.
All these other places. But MSN, here's the thing. Here's the thing. If you go to the wrestlingrewind.com, it's a link tree. So all the places where we are linked there. So that's the best way to reach us as well. Folks, we'll be back next week. Again, our social media is going to be how we're going to update you. We're going to kind of plan out when we're doing this Undertaker thing. And until then, we will say goodbye, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to a Nerd to Know Media production.